Good morning, guys. I'm Greg. This is Stephanie. This is our podcast, Living in Key West. But it is a series, Island Stories.
Yeah.
We have a special guest, Mark Barato.
Got it. You nailed it.
Got it. Backyards of Key West. This is exciting. Stephanie.
Yeah.
What's up with you?
Well, I'm excited that Mark's here because he's our second interview, but we were like his, like, 186th, something like that. 185th. Yeah, that's right.
But I wasn't counting.
So we have already talked to Mark, but we did the vast majority of the talking in that instance, and now Mark gets to do the vast majority.
Yes, I'm a little excited, a little nervous being on the spotlight chair over here.
Well, because you said you haven't done a lot of podcasts before,
right?
Like, you haven't been a guest on a podcast,
right? A couple.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising to me. I would think that, like, a bunch of people would have podcasts and they would all immediately ask you to be on if they've been on your podcast.
Well, I guess the question is there a ton of podcasts?
No,
there's only like four or five.
Yeah, there's a handful.
It could be more. Well, you probably just keep seeing the same one.
That's true. Yeah.
They all say Key West, so eventually you're going to just keep
getting. There's probably only like 100 or something like that.
Yeah,
totally. Okay.
And I know what you guys are wondering, did we plan our outfits? And the answer is, of course.
Yeah, we did. We have a WhatsApp group where
we just say, hey, what do you got wearing today? He said, white shirt. I said, done.
Today's Tuesday underwear day.
Yes. We are not wearing pants, just FYI.
I'm the third wheel, basically.
You are. I don't even know why you're here.
Sorry. Yeah. I'll just see myself out. You guys can finish this.
All right.
Okay, so who are you, which we already know, and what do you do? Like, Backyards of Key West, tell us about it.
So I have an art gallery at the Shops in Mallory Square.
Yeah.
And basically, geez, something I never thought I was going to do until I moved here to Key West.
Yeah.
I was always in advertising, marketing, had my own consulting company. And then we could talk about, if you want, the genesis of how Backyards of Key West started. But it's basically a gallery that we have at the Shops of Mallory Square, which is near where the Sunset Mallory Square stuff happens, right next to the aquarium, next to the customs house.
Cruise ship
mania. We opened that up about 2.5 years ago. Is my wife, Denine, and I opened it up 2.5 years ago, where it's all photographs that I take, and then I paint over them digitally with a stylist in Photoshop, and then so they kind of have a painting feel to them, delete the original picture, and then do all my own printing. So I print everything on canvas, stretch it, ship it. I do everything but deliver it. Mm-hmm. I leave that to UPS, which we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Luckily, that's off the air.
Or is it?
Possibly. There's a bug in that tuna up there. And so it's primarily that's the work that I started with and have been doing. My wife does epoxy resin work, so the ocean waves and stuff of that nature. It looks like an aerial shot. Whenever I tell people that the houses that you're seeing, the art here, start as a photograph, then they go to the epoxy and they're like, oh, those are photographs too, and those are not. That's
actually acrylic
paint with resin mixed together on wood boards and all that.
Yeah.
And then recently I started doing more original work. I have a series that I just started called 100 Hemingways, and it's the classic bust of Hemingway in black and white with the turtleneck. Like, that look is the same base for all the pieces of art, but is acrylic paint behind it. Some of them, he has sunglasses. Some of them, he has a medallion that says Papa with gold leaf on it. It's got diamond dust on it, acrylic. It's really fun. So I'm committed to do 100 of those.
Ooh.
Not NFTs, real live art. And hopefully get that done within the year.
Well, what number are you on?
4.
Oh.
All right. You're getting there. Almost there. Hey, but you got to start somewhere.
It's more of a commitment to do it than it is to be like, ooh, art successful with it. It's the, I like setting these difficult things for me to do in life, and then achieving that is really the goal.
Yeah, you want to set those lofty goals.
Oh, yeah.
Get those goals, and then you're like, you did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I like to say, you're done for the rest of the year. So just go to sleep. You don't do anything else. No?
More like for like a day and then reset and start over.
And start your next 100 or whatever.
Whatever I'm excited about.
So it sounds like it's more about the process for you. Like,
everything.
Yeah, the grind.
And the challenge and something new, like you said. So now you have to come up with 100 different looks, essentially.
Yeah, I'm doing that. Like, I probably have 20 of them done already.
Okay.
The looks and the stuff that I want. New ideas pop in my head all the time, so I'm always journaling those ideas on what they're going to be, and then the implementation of it is the work process. And then when it's done, and then That was, like, the process, like you mentioned, is more exciting to me than the achievement, the practicing and running the marathon rather than the celebratory, hey, I finished. That's not as as exciting to me.
So have you read the book The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron?
Yes.
Okay, so what is your creative process, or how do you stay connected to that inner creative space? You just mentioned journaling, but I'm curious, do you have any other ways that you do that, like on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, I used to be a person that said, I'm not a morning person. And then I defunct that rather quickly. And now I love the mornings. I'm up very early all the time. So I do walking meditation. So I go for a walk in the morning, then I go to the gym and exercise. And that, like, kind of kicks off my entire day. So doing those things in the morning is where I get my, like, the basis of my creativity, because I'm not really thinking about anything. Mm-hmm. And in the non-thinking of things is when ideas kind of pop in. Yeah. I like to say, as an artist, I'm less like an avant-garde niche. I'm creating these, even though my stuff is more niche because it's Key West, mm-hmm. but it's like, I think my superpower in the art world is doing things that I like, the things I like 80% of everyone else will like. Instead of, if it's super niche, it's a specific crowd you're going after. You have to charge $4,000 or $5,000 for pieces like that, where my pieces will go from $99 to $350 for the same piece. Mm-hmm. So it's I have a good eye for that, mm-hmm. for what the mass is like, the 80% like, and that's why I think it's been successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the accessibility of your art. That's something that I know, like, anytime we've talked about Mark's art, I'm always really excited to talk about it because I love it, and I really love the Hemingway stuff, so I'm really excited about your project that you're doing.
Yeah.
But I love how accessible it is, because people can have a piece of Key West or some memory or something that they've attached to on this island, and they can have a really beautiful piece of art in their home, and it's accessible. It's not that $5,000 price point.
Yes,
like that.
A lot of people can afford that, and the really cool thing is you do custom work too.
Yeah.
Yes. So, like, and I know we had someone reach out to us that then reached out to you, or actually, no, they reached out to you,
and
you
reached out to
and said that they wanted custom work, and you're able to do it, and
They heard me on your show, and then they asked, do you happen to do custom work?
Mm-hmm.
True, even though on the website there's a thing that says custom, and you could read about it and see some pictures of some of the stuff that I did. But I'm getting into a lot more of that, where people come into the gallery or they email me and they say, hey, listen, I have a house here, or I have a home in another city. Can I send you those pictures? Can you work off of this? Can you make this happen? And I'm getting a lot more of that. And it's still affordable. It's a little bit more because I have to customize everything.
Sure.
Like, somebody just asked me to do the, on Sunset Pier, those signs. And my gallery is called Selfie Most Point because one of the signs is Selfie Most Point. It's like the ones where all the different boards saying, like, New York and this many miles. So they said, hey, I want you to put all of our cities that we like on there. So that's a little bit of a custom job right there, because I have to erase all the other ones. I have to make it look like wood. I have to redraw them all on there. And they're not just like an Arial font.
Yeah,
it's like,
you're not just copy and paste
them. Yeah, it's like nicer. And you know, it's a big job to do, but that's exciting for me.
Yeah.
Those challenges of, like, on the fly, can you do this? And I start working on it. And sometimes it may not be the best picture. You know, sometimes it's old. Sometimes it was taken with an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a house. Can you put these five dogs that all passed away of mine over the last 20 years and put them in there? Sometimes it's like the dog from the waist down is missing, not in real life, but in the picture. And I have to put the whole dog in there, so I have to reconstruct a dog.
Oh,
I mean, it's a lot.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because when I did woodworking in Gainesville, I would do dog art. So where I'd use the scroll saw, and then I'd get a photo from someone's animal or pet or whatever, it didn't have to be a dog, and then I'd put it on there, and then I'd cut it out and make it look unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then, so many times you're like, you'd have to send it back, or you'd have to be like, okay, I'm just going to have to draw the rest of this ear on there, or I'm going to have to add a tail or some legs, because the photos aren't quite what you would love to have them at.
Right.
So you don't have to do all that little bit of extra imagining what the hind end of this dog looks like.
Yeah.
Right? So it does add a little extra challenge to what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. Some of, like, my hardest one I ever did was, they're like my, it's a apartment building now, but it used to be, it's a small apartment building. It used to be a house, someone's house. It's a grandmother's house, and they want a picture done of that, like a piece of art done of that. But the problem is, there's all bushes in front of it. And they wanted to see the upper left corner of the house, because that's where the mother used to sit all the time.
Okay.
So now I have to take like 50 different pictures of all these angles to have reference to eliminate the tree and to then rebuild the structure of the house to make it look like that. So those are the challenge ones, but I don't know. I mean, I've been a technologist my whole life, and I'm a bit of a loner in a lot of ways, and I'm very outgoing in other ways, and both of those need to be fed, and with this job, it really feeds me a lot, because I get to be around people all day and be all bubbly and talk to people, and then when I'm doing my work, I get to like put on headphones and close the door and be completely alone.
Yeah.
So for me, it really feeds both parts of me.
Well, it's really interesting you say that, and I have like five things that I want to talk about now, but that you're saying that, I feel like when we have surprised you in your shop, I have felt you like transitioning between those two like headspaces, and I was like, oh gosh, like I really did feel like, oh, I'm like intruding, because you were like in the headspace of like really being inside yourself and focusing on something or whatever, and then it was like, as you just needed like a minute, and then like you were totally fine. But I can tell you have two completely different like places inside of yourself, really.
It took a lot of years to be able to switch them on and off. And my wife gave me a really great compliment, which I thank her for all the time. And she's like, you know, you're really good at, when people come in, to be able to shut off that one part of your brain that you're really into right now and turn on the other one.
It's hard.
And it took a lot of years to not get frustrated with that.
Yeah.
But now it's just like, it's a simple toggle switch now.
Yeah.
But I'm closing in on 50, and there was a lot of pain to get to that.
Yeah. No, I understand completely. I am interested, because we didn't talk about this when we were on your show, but I am interested about your path from what your previous career was and into becoming a working artist, and what, I'm sure that there are probably a lot of people out there who would love to have art as their work, or, you know, so I'm just curious how, like, what was your past work and how did you end up becoming an artist?
Sure. I think I'm very lucky and blessed that the stories I'm going to tell you happened before, because as an artist, most are starving, which is the joke everybody talks about. And it's not because they're not good at art.
Right.
It's because they don't understand business.
Right.
And that's a lot of problem, because the right brain, left brain, all that kind of stuff. So for me, I was always in advertising and marketing. So when I graduated college, I worked up in New York City, because that's where I'm from. And in doing advertising sales. So I had an apartment with a roommate. It cost me $1,000 a month, was my cut of the rent. My salary was $1,000 a month, working in this like print magazine selling advertising, and then had to sell to survive. So my natural sales, you know, that's the going more from an introvert to an extrovert began there, in having to sell to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, I didn't like the cold or New York, and said, I'll never move back to New York. So much so, I have this for video's sake, the people listening, I'll describe it. On my keys, I have a token from New York City.
Yeah.
They don't make them anymore, youngsters. Now it's on cards. This is like a penny with a hole in it.
Oh my
and
God.
It was so that was what you need to go in the subway. You had to place those in there. So you had to have like a pocket full of change, basically, everywhere you went.
Now you got the Metro card.
Right. So I kept that last one. That was my last token when I left New York City, as a reminder that I'll never move back to New York City, which we'll get to that in a second. So came back to Florida, worked in the print business doing ad sales, worked in a whole bunch of other marketing type companies, until a friend of mine came up to me and he said, hey, listen, I sold my house. This is in South Beach. I was living in Miami Beach. Like, I sold my condo. I didn't have any roommates at the time. I wasn't married. I had no girlfriend. He's like, can I move in with you? Because I'm getting back into trading in the stock market for myself full time. I was like, oh, you know, I knew about the stock market. Mm-hmm. I had invested long term when I was younger and stuff like that. And I was like, ooh, I never, you know, met anybody that was a day trader in the stock market. Usually that's a really bad recipe for disaster.
Yeah, right.
So he moved in with me, and I remember at the time I was working for a company called Markolin. Markolin was like the number one sales organization for all the high-end eyewear. So like Dolce & Gabbana, D&G, Roberto Cavalli, all those brands would go to somebody who was an expert in that field and say, cool, can you help in the manufacturing, coming up with the designs for this stuff, and then sell it for us? Put it in stores, do the marketing for it, do shows, all these different things. So I was in charge of the marketing at the time for that company. So my friend comes in, and he's living with me, and he starts trading, and I remember this vividly. It's a Monday, I go to work, I come home, I'm like, how'd you do today? And he's like, I made a couple thousand. And I was like, oh, okay. Next day, come home, how'd you do? And this guy is a guy that underplays everything. Mm. He's not flashy. He's like, the biggest lesson I learned from him when we did business together was he would ask me a question, and if I answered like yes, he'd be like, well, tell me about it. So there was no BSing with this guy, because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I read that book. And they're like, oh, tell me about it. And you're like, oh, I didn't really read it. It's like, oh. So he flushed out a lot of that and made like your word is your bond kind of thing. So day two, same thing, two okay. grand. Day three, 1500. Day four, two grand. Day five, come home. So how'd you do today? I didn't do that well. I'm like, here you go. All that money plus more left. He's like, I made like 200 and went to the pool by noon. And I'm like, I'm in the wrong business. In the wrong business. I was like, at the tail end of my job, didn't know if that's something I wanted to do anymore, yeah. Wanted to switch careers. Of course, when you're young, the desire of living your own life and making great money, you know, that's appealing. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, have you ever taught anyone? He's like, no, but I could probably teach you if you want. I'm like, all right, cool. Now, you can ask follow-up questions to why. I don't know why, but I said, all right, cool. I'm switching my role at the company I'm with to doing sales, meaning like I have a rolling cart of eyewear that I go to stores to sell so that I can have more free time to learn this with you. And he's like, cool. Well, you know, you trade with me till 4, the market closes, and then go hit all your stores. So I'm like, all right, didn't have any money at the time, took out a line of credit on my apartment because it was paid off.
Okay.
Took out the line of credit for 50 grand, put it in there. He's like, here's how it's going to go. Your first month, you're going to lose 20%. That's your cost of education. To be aware of that. Be okay with it now. You're going to lose 10 grand out of the 50. Mm-hmm. That's just like going to college. I'm like, all right, cool. So I get ready. We set everything up. We're doing this together. Now, granted, he's never taught anybody. So yeah. Later we realized there was a learning curve in the teacher, too. So first week, lost 5 grand. And he lost a little bit, too, which was unheard of for him.
Okay.
Second week, lost like 3 grand. So I'm like, all right, I bet that's 7.
You 2 weeks in.
Third week, lost like 1,000, and then the fourth week, made like 10,000, and then never looked back. Wow. So we then traded together for full-time traders for 4 years.
Wow.
Got rid of the other job immediately, started doing that, and everything we did was all based on rules. Constant mental push-up every single day, because he had this methodology. It was called intraday trading, is when you, at the end of the day, you have no more stocks or bonds or anything, no options, nothing. So you can sleep at night. So intraday trading, and it was, most people do what's called trend trading, which is if stocks going up, you buy it and you catch the wave. He did something called capitulation trading, which was something that he made up at the time, which was when he first started, he did trend trading. And every time he mentally decided, I'm going in, the thing would do the opposite. So he's like, I'm just going to do the opposite of what my brain wants to do. So every time I'm thinking to go in, I'm going to go short. Or if I should go short, I'm going to buy, go long. And he did that and started to realize, oh, that's working, because people, like what we found out is that if you have a person that has $100,000 and that's their life savings and they're in a stock, 1,000 shares of it, it's a $100 stock. So that's $100,000. And it starts going down in one day quickly, 90, 89, right around, depending upon the stock, a certain number, there's panic that comes in. Mm-hmm. So 10% of people will get out immediately. Mm-hmm. 10% will go, I'm getting out when it goes bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And the other 80% get out at this particular emotional threshold.
Yep.
And it's usually when there's momentum and panic coming in. So we buy into that. We buy into that. It'd go lower. We'd double up on the shares. It'd go lower. We'd double up. And then as it's coming up, we'd exit at a small loss, exit in profit, exit. Whole thing would be 3-4 minutes. So it would be eliminating the emotional aspect of that. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, in those 5 years, we had books and books of rules and things to do and had a great playbook on how this was all going to work. And it really worked well for us. Mm-hmm. We did very well. Luckily, we were successful at what we did. The only problem that we both had was you started to become numb to things. Mm-hmm. Like, less him, more me. Because I'm a very emotional person in good ways. Mm-hmm. And I was just felt my emotions started to slip. Mm-hmm. Because you have to be numb if you make 10 grand in a day. And you have to be numb if you lose 40.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to.
Yeah.
It's survival. It's like being in an abusive relationship where after you've gotten hit so many times, you're just like, this is my partner.
Normal.
This is normal. And I didn't like that. I don't think he liked it either. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, there were computer programs coming in. They're called HFTs, high frequency trading, where when panic would start to come in, the littlest bit of panic, see, people wouldn't sit there and wait and decipher the news. Mm-hmm. Like this past Friday when the banks started collapsing, there's no negative reason why they wouldn't put out the news immediately. See, they put out the news on Friday purposely. Mm-hmm. They put out the news on Friday. The bank may have started to fail 2 days earlier. Mm-hmm. They put the news out on a Friday because the market closes on a Friday. So people panicked, and people were stocked. The stock market was crumbling. Like, Meta, which is Facebook, has nothing to do with the bank. Mm-hmm. Their money wasn't in that bank. Their money spread out in a variety of different places. But yet, that's an example of a stock that went down because of that. So it goes down on a Friday. The market closes. Then what do you think's going to happen? Good news is going to come out by Sunday, so that Monday the market goes up. Now it fluctuates and all that kind of stuff. So there's when there's time for emotions to come in to start to think, then there's less panic. So these high frequency trading computer programs would buy, sell so fast that the capitulation aspect, the greed or the fear part, would start to go away.
Yeah.
So we were seeing our style start to go away.
So that messed with how you guys were doing
it. Messed with our performance.
You couldn't really follow with that because it was. The machine was predicting what they thought was going to happen, what's happening.
Yeah. Sometimes the machine would stop the cascade event. So it would cascade, stop, and then cascade again. And that wasn't good for us because we were in and out kind of traders. So then he moved to New York. His name is Mark as well. He moved to New York and wanted to form a brokerage business because he had a bunch of money saved up and he wanted to start using that to educate traders in our style, excuse me, and less of our style and more in the emotional aspect of how to control things. Mm-hmm. So he started doing that, and I was living in Orlando at the time with my wife, and we just had our son. And I was working with different people in the marketing world. And the reason why is because I just always loved it. I always loved it. I saw how technology was changing. I was starting to learn to build websites. With Flash and these programs that aren't even existing anymore. And really fell in love with that. Then my friend Mark calls me back and he says, hey, listen, we're starting this brokerage business. I need your help because we're communicating all the time still. He's like, you know all the marketing, you know these business things, like come up and help. So we went up to New York, to Connecticut, because my wife is from Connecticut. Okay. So we went to Connecticut. She's like, let's go for the month. We'll bring the kid. He's like 2 years old. We'll rent a place in Westport, Connecticut, and you could commute into the city. It's a win for us. I see my parents. You go, it's fun. It's the summer. Who doesn't love doing that kind of stuff? So we went into the city, and it was like an office this big with like 10 traders in it, a big desk. There was no toll-free number. There was no website, and the business was still thriving. So I'm like, I'm building a website. We're going to get one box and have like push one for this and like an important sounding, you know, we're professional. Who's going to send you 10 grand when you're like, you don't know who that you are? People did, but. So needless to say, we built a very large proprietary broker-dealer business, moved a couple of offices, built a really big, successful business. And in 2013, we sold the business because we both felt that the regulation was always changing. And we had rules that we followed from the SEC and the NASDAQ. And then 1 week later, they would alter those rules without telling anybody. And then the SEC would come, and then we'd pay a fine because of that. So it was a printing machine for a lot of those companies. We had an SEC attorney who helped us form our broker-dealer. All this stuff we need to do this. Needless to say, we felt like we were running a casino without the shows and the food. And the reason why is because we must have 10,000 traders come through our door. Maybe five had the emotional capacity to control themselves. And that was our biggest thing that was just so disheartening that, you know, it's like being a personal trainer and every client's fat and they get fatter. You're like, what am I doing wrong? And it's not really you. They need a they need like psychological help in a good way with a therapist before they can go into doing something like that. So my job, this is a very long-winded answer to what your question was, but my my job was to do the sales and the marketing and then risk management, clean toilets and everything a business owner does. We were the first company to really be advertising on Google AdWords, 10 cents a click. We're paying for stock trading, New York City, all those kind of things. We were the first company to put electronic fingerprinting online because before I had a mail. You call me and say, I'm ready. I want to sign up. Cool. I got to go to FedEx. FedEx you my package. You got to go to the police station. You got to do your fingerprinting.
The whole thing.
Then you got to get everything notarized. By that time, people like forget it. Not that I wanted to rush people into it. I just wanted to make it more efficient. So we got electronic fingerprinting. You go to UPS, you put your finger, it scans it. We got that approved, and we got DocuSign approved. So in doing those two things, we turned a 7 to 10 day process into a 24-hour process. Because we can email them DocuSign. They signed it. Go to UPS. We'll stay on the phone while you walk there, and they take care of it, and it was done. So it was a really big onboarding process that we did. So when we sold the business in 2013, a lot of my clients, which were larger businesses or individuals, were like, listen, I love what you did and how you were innovative in that uninnovative business. Can you help me with some of my marketing? So I had a lot of those clients come, and at the time I was studying all the social media. Facebook at the time didn't even have pages. So like if you wanted, like I had Mark Barato on Facebook, and then I had the company name. First name, first part of the company, last name before they had the business.
Profile.
Yeah, it's a profile. And the picture was like the company logo. It was like crazy. Until that all got fixed. But there was no advertising on Facebook. There was none of that. But I was still studying all of that stuff. So I got, we got rid of the business. I started getting these clients, moved back to Miami. So living in Miami Beach at the time. And started working with these clients and helping them build their businesses, just like we did with our other company. And kept learning new technologies, taking courses, just trying to be ahead of the curve with how everything was going. And built a decent business doing that, helped a lot of my clients. Before I moved to Key West, my wife gets full credit for the name Backyards of Key West because my mom, well, maybe my mom should get the credit. Because my mom bought us this book called The Rooftops of New York, which are like, you know, you go into an apartment in New York City and it's all right. And then they're like, well, let's go onto the balcony. And you're like, whoa, there's like a 3,000 square foot balcony that like with a lawn and it looks like John Wick movie. Like that's a real person's place. And you're like, I can't believe this. So she's like, you know, we're going to move to Key West and we could talk about why we chose Key West. But we go to move to Key West and she's like, we should do something called the Backyards of Key West and do a coffee table book. Because every time you peek over that fence, you see this yard like these rooftops, right? So I started posting these backyards from realtors that would contact me or I would contact them because we weren't even living in Key West yet.
Yeah.
And I'd say, hey, can I share your back, this picture of your backyard on my Instagram?
Yeah.
They're like, totally, yeah. No problem. And two followers, yeah. Right? Didn't matter. So I started doing that and building it and responding to all the comments. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is cool. So then my clients would be saying like, well, I don't know if doing a podcast will work, Mark. I don't know if, like, my social media is a zero. How am I going to build this? Like, all these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, cool. I started this thing back here at the Key West. I'm going to do a coffee table book. I'm going to show you using this as an example. The minute we moved to Key West, I'm like, going to start the podcast. I'm going to be the test subject for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Started the podcast. Started posting on social media, communicating with the audience. And then as it was starting to grow and build, and my customers were like, oh, I'll do a podcast. This seems to be working. I would communicate with them and ask them questions that they would help answer, which and then help themselves. So I would be like, cool, I have these pictures. Some I'm taking, some I'm getting from realtors. I'm posting these things. What kind of products do you think I should sell? Because I'm telling you guys to sell products and you don't want to do t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You need to figure that out. So give me an example of what you think I should do. They're like, why don't you paint some of those homes? So this was my clients.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm not really a good painter, but I am good with technology and Photoshop. And many, many years ago, my wife took a picture of these blueberries when we lived in Orlando.
She, that was like Greg's favorite.
Yeah.
That you have.
I want this as a painting.
Yeah.
So played with it, got it to look like a watercolor type painting. Spent $400 to get it printed at some local printer. We still have it. It's awesome. So I'm like, let me go back to doing that. Of course, Photoshop was totally different. I had to like redo it and figure out how to do it. Started to figure it out and play with it. And then started an online business. Learned Shopify, built a Shopify store, started putting a couple pieces on there, shipping them out to people. And it was a little bit of a thriving online business. So I'm like to the clients, look, these are ideas you came up with. They're working. Podcast is growing. Social media is growing. We're selling online. This is a secondary business. This is how you guys should be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, awesome. Let's see how this continues to grow for you. So we sign up for our first show on Duval Street, like I'm getting a booth.
Yep.
To in April. It's every year. It's called Conk Republic Days. And you have a booth, and it's just like a bunch of art and soaps and t-shirts. It's not just an art show. And it's on Duval Street, which is great. So we signed up to do that in April a couple years ago. And at the same time, Ocean Blues, who's our neighbors, right? Jasmine and Caitlin, they were like, hey, we do a rotating artist of the month. So for the month of April, we want to put some of your art in there. So I'm like, cool. I printed like four or five pieces. I put it in there. 2 days later, they're like, we sold out everything. Do you want to bring us more? I'm like, the minute you sell out of one, tell me and I'll replace it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Immediately.
Yeah.
So I'm like driving there every day. I'm like, wow, this is cool. Needless to say, they're right across from where my gallery is now. Mm. So
okay.
Then we had our show and we did great. Sold out during the show. And I'm like, oh, okay. I have my clients. I don't know where to get an office. There's like, I don't want to be in a coffee shop anymore. Mm-hmm. It's too loud. Maybe I'll rent a space in the shops in Mallory Square, mm-hmm. make that like my office, put the podcast studio in there. Mm-hmm. And if I could break even, I'd be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then needless to say, we started doing really well to the point where I was like, I got rid of all the clients. I said, listen, guys, thanks for all the help. You're on your own.
You really did really well for me. So, arrivederci.
Yeah. You know all that advice that we bounced off each other? Well,
it worked.
Clearly this works. And I'm not saying that it's like the most successful business I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's the hardest I've ever worked because not only am I working in the gallery, but I'm doing the art, then I'm going home and I'm printing everything. I'm cutting the wooden bars. I'm stretching everything. I'm packing. I'm getting labels done. Like, you know, it's an all day, all night affair that has to happen.
Yeah.
But it gave an avenue also for my wife, who's much more artistic than me with paint, to relive some of her love for art.
Yeah.
and be a co-collaborator in the space. Yeah. So it all was birthed from me helping clients on what they needed to do. And in essence, they really helped me get into that groove of something I didn't even know I enjoyed doing.
Yeah, that's such a cool story.
Yeah, it's... I think I've never told that story.
Yeah, I love... No, I'm so excited that you told it. And I love that you didn't really necessarily have, like, the goal of, like, I want to be an artist, I want to be an artist. But you were open to the process and open to what kind of
came.
Yeah, and it brought you to this, like, beautiful place that you wouldn't have even planned for yourself necessarily.
Yeah. I have a really big problem with people wasting a lot of time and doing a lot of stupid things.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult for me to... have an employer.
Yeah.
I've known that about myself. That could be a negative thing. It could be a positive thing. It's just that every time I start working for somebody else and I get shut down.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, you listen to what I say, you know, the Popeye, I am what I am and that's all that I am kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that.
Uh-huh.
That's why I don't do that to people. Mm-hmm. Anyone that overworks with me or for me, like I've had two guys that were our right-hand guys when we had our broker-dealer that have gone on. Like, my biggest success is they've gone on to be so much more successful than I am. And we still communicate, and they still tell me that, like, it was a great learning experience, and I helped them push them in that direction because they did it.
Yeah,
I just helped guide them a little, like father figure-esque guiding.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, like, the ideal a boss should be, right? Not like you keep them stuck under your wing
Absolutely.
Or you build me as a business, but more like they blossom into something. It's like a parent. You want your kid to be better than you in all these ways.
Right.
Right? Doesn't have to be more successful. Happier than you is being better than you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's like a football coach too, right?
Yeah.
You want all your assistant coaches, don't get me wrong, it's lovely to have the best wide receiver coach in the nation, but you also want him to go be a coach somewhere.
Yeah.
You want him to do good and start being a head coach and you know,
but I think that's a very evolved way of thinking about it. And we're 100% on the same page, and it's hard to even imagine thinking in a different way.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do not think like that, and so like, but you're preaching to the choir completely. Like being shut down or telling people like this is the way it has to be, and not being open to feedback or helping them be better, or like not having. I always have a problem too with. Whether it's in like a work situation or something where someone has suffered and so they insist that the people that come behind them also suffer.
Yeah.
Like I have a problem with that. It's like, to me, if you have the power to prevent someone suffering, not in a way that they don't learn or go through growing pains and things that are helpful to them, but just suffering for the sake of suffering because like you had some oppressive person that was training you. Like to me, it's just so short-sighted. It's like, why does it have to be that way? So yeah, we're totally on the same.
But your analogy with sports is so right on because if you look at sports and you look at the military, they have their negatives, of course, but like there's the most efficiently run organizations, I would say, in the world because there's so much ego in both of those and so little ego in both of those things. Because if you're a star quarterback, you want to so desperately win and do all these things and crush somebody, and you need that that mental fortitude to push through that. But in the same token, you're going to listen to your brothers and sisters, the players you play with, the staff that are there, your coach, your therapist. Like, there's such a mix of ego and humility, I think, especially in the military, because you have murderers who are there to protect the country at any cost, but yet are the most respectful people to people below them and people above them. Not all, but most. But most. So, like, that's something that can be taught. And unfortunately, I'm taught what my father taught me. That's usually our life. Not many people go to seek out extra education because typically education stinks. And that's probably one of the reasons why I have a problem with that squashing that people and bosses do, because most of the time, like, I don't like keyboard warriors that have learned from 48 hours of Google research. You may know more on Google research than me. You may know more on the proper form to do a push-up. But if I've been doing it for 20 years, I may not have perfect form, but you have never done one.
Right.
You know? So the people that like to preach Let me tell you what to do. I've read every book and I've researched.
Yeah.
That's a lot of professors,
yeah.
unfortunately.
Yeah.
A lot of professors that teach things have never taught it in a real life business situation
right.
where they've had to apply it.
Right.
Yeah. And on that, I saw that a lot in the woodworking world. Like people would be, especially like on Instagram or something, if someone who you know is super talented and they do phenomenal work and they'll put it up on Instagram. And even if they share their process on what they did, you have people on there who would be like, oh, that's not the correct way to do it. Blah, 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 blah. Did he get the job done? Does it look probably better than anything you could ever do? And you've never even held a hammer? Well, yeah.
Does he have an insane number of followers and
yeah.
people who buy his work?
Yeah.
It's like, it's good enough. I mean,
it's,
yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
still doing okay, or she's still doing okay.
Yeah.
So
a lot of keyboard warriors out there.
Yeah, and that's the hardest thing to practice, and I feel like as I'm getting older, I'm being less reactive to that and I'm being more empathetic to that person's got some kind of issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
right?
like projection or it's yeah.
Lots of trolls.
Lots of trolls.
Yeah, lots of unhappy people.
Yes.
When I hear troll, I hear unhappy
yeah.
people.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And when I do our lives in the morning, I have a lot of,
yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, my wife posted a picture of Sloppy Joe's. She was up early, went there. It was a picture of Sloppy Joe's from the Caroline Street side.
Yeah.
And people were like, fake. This is fake. Where are the awnings? There's no awnings. There's awnings on Sloppy Joe. Oh, on the Duval side.
Right.
There are.
Yeah.
But on the other side,
it's
there aren't.
Flat.
It's like, what are you talking about? I took this picture this morning. Oh, and there just happened to be no scooters parked there? She's like, yeah.
Yeah,
no
the mornings are the best time to go walking because there's no one out.
The best photographs.
The best photographs.
Oh,
but that's
God.
Somebody, like, my
yeah.
initial reaction to that now, not all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe most of the time, no.
Yeah.
But, like, if 1% now, my reaction is going, well, that person got hurt by something. A fake photo, a fake something, got the wool pulled over the eyes, is angry, going through divorce.
Yes.
Like, I'm not defending them. I'll defend
no,
my wife way over that.
Yeah.
But I'm like...
It's more them than you.
Yeah,
I tell my wife all the time, I only have so much hard drive space. I don't have time to store that. I don't have any more room to store that thought. So it's easier to go, how do I clean it?
Yep.
And the way to clean it is, if I'm thinking that person's trying to kill me or hurt me, then I have to sit there and dawn and think about
yeah.
this thing. But if I'm like, oh, they got beat by their parents, in and out.
Yeah.
Delete from the hard drive, onto the next thing.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there who just are trying to get a rise
yeah.
under something's not going well for them.
Yeah.
So
well,
they're trying
I think it's really interesting some of your stories that you've told before. There have been, now he's gotten really to a point where he doesn't kind of go back at people, but there have been some people that you sort of.
I want to though, but
yeah,
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't because
it's
at the end of the day, you're not going to win.
No. Well,
and
but this is what I was going to say is the stories about the people who you have kind of like not like
mm.
gone back and forth with, but kind of said like that's not it or whatever. You kind of like appealed to them a little bit, and that, like some of them are like our biggest fans,
right?
Like big, you know, because it's like they almost wanted to fight, and Greg didn't fight them, but kind of like approached them and said something, and then
yeah.
it's like so they really were having a bad day.
Yeah,
they really
right.
were just coming from a weird place, but actually now they're like so happy to be part of our community. So
yeah,
sort of
some
that
of our
too.
biggest fans
yeah.
now, but it's almost like. And I don't want to say this because it's not like I put them in their place.
No,
but
no,
you had to kind of be like...
assertive kind of.
I'm not going out there right now. I'm not going to walk to the southernmost point right now, but I will either tomorrow or maybe we'll go there in 5 minutes, but I'm not going now. Don't ask again.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to block you.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just people out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when on my woodworking page, still gets me to this day, but
no.
I was doing an epoxy pour with orange and blue and... you know, if someone reposted it who had like over a million followers or whatever, and everyone's like, oh, that looks great, blah, blah, blah. Someone said that I had hairy arms. That's all they took from it.
You
and I was like, I got hairy arms. I'm a dude.
Yeah.
Not every dude has hairy arms, but.
You should have been like, and that's why pouring epoxy is difficult because my hair from my arms gets
you
in that epoxy.
I got to go around with tweezers getting my arm
right,
hair out.
Right.
But I think to Mark's point, you can't let it take up hard drive space.
Yeah.
Like, you have to get to a point. If you're putting yourself out there, if you're putting your work out there, if you're putting whatever out there, that you just
yeah.
have to, like, compartmentalize.
And it's not that it's not as easy as I think we're making it sound.
It's the most difficult thing in the world.
Yeah,
but you've got to. If you're going to keep moving forward, you can't let that stop you and get to and
yeah,
make you go backwards.
Yeah, if you want to do stuff in social media and you want to do stuff in marketing where there's going to be a mass amount of people that are anonymous that can comment and be involved in your world, you either have to, one, don't read any posts and ghosts like Joe Rogan says, or you have to be involved and be like, and don't pick fights, you know, and just be like, well, you know, like, I have hairy arms because when I did 23andMe, I am 25% Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Which I am, by the way.
Yes.
25% Neanderthal. Which was great because every time I'm being like the typical ogre man, I say to my wife, I am a Neanderthal.
Okay,
so the genes are there for my knuckles to drag on the floor.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Well, okay, I don't want to skip over talking about Instagram,
yeah,
because that's what your greatest following is.
You're
and
following on Instagram.
And you also have a very successful Facebook group as well that Deneen actually
read. I told you. See how much, how quick that thing grew?
Yeah, it's amazing.
But now it's like completely stopped. So we can talk about that too.
Okay.
Algorithms, people.
Ours did too, which is...
Yeah.
Not that ours isn't as big as yours, but I mean, it's still... If we were growing, then literally, what has it been, about a week?
Yeah.
It's been about a week.
Yeah.
It just
started.
Yeah.
Just dead.
Yeah. And the thing is, so for people that don't know, when you have your Facebook personal page, then you have a business profile you can do, then you can do a group, which could be like, you know, Mothers of Nebraska. And then in there, you just only allow mothers who live in Nebraska. And in there, there's no algorithm.
Right.
To my knowledge, there's no algorithm, which means if you have 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 followers and you post, they'll all see it. Whereas in the normal feed, it would be a fire hose of information and no one would see anything, which is one of the reasons why Twitter began to collapse many years ago, because they have no algorithm at all. Whereas Facebook said, we need to have an algorithm in here to help people see the things they really want to see. Because as much as you love him or hate him, Zucks only wants more followers. He doesn't necessarily want to make more money and more money and more money because he knows that it can destroy the platform. He wants more users on the platform, which means he wants happy users, which means he doesn't want people to not be there and leave. Now, when people started leaving to TikTok, which we can get into, there was a little dirty pool going on with everybody, like to try to really pay the government or get in their ear about pulling the plug on TikTok and all that kind of stuff. So it's a little dirty pool. When you're the lion and you've climbed to that mountain and you're roaring and there's one coming up because you're getting old, you can't change the rules on how you got there.
Right.
Yep. You got there. You need to let them get there through merit.
Right.
And try to adjust.
Yeah. It's like spend your time being better rather than trying to, like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Hey.
Pull the ladder.
Instagram, you can't grow followers now. No. Like, it's extremely difficult. And that's not to take away from anyone who did grow their followings prior to that.
I think it's just the algorithm, right?
But, yeah. I mean, it's it was much easier to grow your following
way back in the inception.
Way back when than right now. Right now.
Yeah.
If you're starting off, man, you better hope you get it. Several viral.
I would say 6 months ago the plug got pulled. The minute Reels started, Instagram has Reels, which is their idea to compete with TikTok, which is more on the social graph, the interest graph over the social graph. The social graph is who your friends are, is who we're going to show stuff to. The interest graph is we're going to show you stuff you like, not just stuff from your friends. Like when you go on TikTok and you look, there's that, like, once you start looking, it shows you stuff you're interested in. If you, like, swipe to the right, it brings you to all the people you're following, which no one goes to. Whereas all the other platforms start there.
Yep.
Hey, we're showing you who you're following. You follow two people, you're just going to see them all day long. So Reels was Instagram's way, Meta's way to combat TikTok and do that. So the minute they started with Reels, they said, unless you're doing this, we're completely shutting off your engagement. We're forcing you, we're putting a block on the funnel and forcing you to do it one way or another. Now, for all the people out there that are boo-hooing about Zuckerberg and Meta and it stinks and all these things, you still got to remember the thing is free and you're still getting advertising out there. And if you did want to pay, it's still $30 and you can make a big impact. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay. Cool. How about this? I always say, and I think I may have told you this, if I was having a complaining conversation with my grandfather and he would agree with me, we're cool. If he'd slap me on the head and go, bro, there was radio and two TV channels. There's no side hustle for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you're telling me you're complaining that you're at in front of 100,000 people and you can send your message to them, but like I'd have to spend $50,000 to get a commercial and you're complaining about that.
Yeah.
So that's
champagne
like
problems.
Yeah, yeah. That's my gauge. My gauge on like what I should really complain.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Look, we're doing a podcast right now.
Yeah.
That typically there'd be $1 million to rent a studio in LA or New York only.
Right.
Key West would be like, please.
Yeah.
I'm going to call Jimmy Buffett and see if I can go in his studio.
Yeah, go use your studio really quick.
And it's like tape is recording. Hold on, we got to change the tape, everybody.
Right.
You know? No.
So when did you start your Instagram?
Before we moved here, four years ago.
4 years ago. Okay.
Only for the desire to do the coffee table book.
Yeah, okay. And you have like over 100,000 followers?
Like 103.
Okay.
And has stayed there ever since for the last...
Yeah.
4 or 5 months.
So what's your secret sauce? Like, how did you, I think you could talk to people who started Instagram 4 years ago and haven't had that success. So what's your secret to success?
It's the same secret if you're going to do anything in life, and that's keep putting in the work.
Consistency.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would post every single day.
Yeah.
I don't think in the last 4 years, unless I went back to some really old posts, because people may comment on older stuff,
yeah.
But I don't think there's any posts I have not responded to any comment any person has put in there.
I think people like forget the social media. Like you get so in your head about it, and it becomes such a like lab and such a science. And it's like, it's really, if you go back to the spirit of social media, it's connection. So when you think about like commenting or replying to comments, it's like less of a, at least I think like when you're replying to comments, it's not like, oh, I have to reply to comments. It's like, this is literally what we're here for, right? Is this community aspect.
People commenting is showing that they're enjoying.
Right.
I mean, unless it's like, oh, you got hairy arms, then, you know, it's like, no way. But
Nice comments.
Yeah. As people, that means that they enjoy your work or they enjoy what you're putting up. Because a lot of, especially when you're doing it for a business or something, a lot of people don't necessarily know who you are, but they love your work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what they're commenting for. So I know, like, on our social media, we try to comment back to reply back to everyone, and we try to. It is work. It's not, social media is not simple. It's. I mean, it could be simple, right? You could just put up.
But it's not easy. Like it's not simple.
Yes,
your secret sauce is consistency. Replying to people's comments.
Yeah, I think you know what I think. It's like, again, going back to my grandfather's time. It's like, if I moved into a new city and I'm a butcher and I open a store and I'm a butcher shop and then I go to a high school football game because I want to support the local high school and I'm sitting there and I hear these housewives or husbands talking about like, oh, they're going to cook a good steak this weekend. I'm like, oh, excuse me. I just moved into town. Mm-hmm. I actually have a butcher shop. Come on by. You know, I'll give you some free stuff. And can you tell me about the team? You're now communicating with people. That's all this is. Mm-hmm. That's all this is. And that's a good segue into what's the difference between Instagram and TikTok? Well, what's the difference of you talking to the husband or wife at the football game to you being at church or wherever,
mm-hmm.
at the bank in line? You're going to act differently in those scenarios. Mm-hmm. So you have to try to act differently in the platform you're posting on. You can't just like spray and pray, as they say. You need to like...
I'll tweet that one.
This isn't Pornhub. This is in social media. Like, you don't just put the same message out. I will decipher that. You would not just put the same message out on 20 different platforms.
Yeah.
Right. It's a little bit different on each one.
Yeah, like your success on TikTok in such a short period of time is because you're doing what the platform wants.
Yeah.
Now, for my growth, it was just consistently putting in the work. There was no special hashtags. Like, I learned about the platform. I learned do the 30 hashtags. Mm-hmm. I learned go in the search function under hashtag, and anybody that put Key West liked their stuff. Mm-hmm. If I liked it, mm-hmm. comment on it. Just get into the room. Mm-hmm. If I'm new in a city and I get invited to a party and I go in there, I can sit in the corner and know nobody, or I can walk around and non-creepily hear something and go, oh, you're from New York, I'm from New York too, and jump in the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's how you make friends.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you build the same thing in social media.
Yeah.
You know? It's like the push-up things again. Yeah. Someone's like, I want to lose weight and I want to get muscle.
Yeah.
It's $1 billion, probably more.
Yeah.
Industry on pills and sauces and apple cider this.
Yeah.
And like, you know, remember in the old days, it was like a thing would go around your waist and shake you so you didn't have to do the workout. It's been going on forever. Where the recipe's easier. More exercise, less food in your mouth. That's it.
It's calorie deficit.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Everyone's a shortcut.
Solution. Everybody wants a shortcut.
And it doesn't exist.
Don't buy followers.
It's consistency.
That's essentially your stomach, abdomen.
Yeah.
Building those abs. Yeah. Don't go buy followers.
Yeah, that's getting an ass implant. That's like getting an ass implant. When you're 90, that ass implant's not going to look good.
Yeah.
No, you never want to buy followers, and here's the main reason why. Because at some point in time, if you ever want to run ads, you're running ads against your audience, and you're showing your, I don't know, strawberry jam company to maybe 500 people in the Philippines.
Right.
So that's not going to help you.
Yep.
It's never going to help you.
If you're doing like a lookalike or something.
If it's $10 for 10,000 followers, don't do it.
Yeah. And again, that goes back to if you ever are questioning, going back to the spirit of why you're on social media or what you're trying to do, it's not really about, it is about the vanity metrics to a certain extent, because the more followers, the more eyeballs of people, they're going to see what you're really there to talk about or whatever. But it's not really about numbers for the sake of numbers.
Right.
Like, people get so confused about it. And it's like, it's really about having those real conversations and actually connecting with the human beings who are behind those profiles. That's how you're going
to... You're not going to make more money in your business by buying anything, followers or anything.
No.
You're going to lose
Absolutely
money.
Not.
You
lose
money doing that. You may go around to your friends and say, I have 100,000 followers. But what you need to also look at is that, whether it's on YouTube or whether it's TikTok or any platform, you can just easily sniff out the fakes by looking at the engagement.
Yep. 100%.
It's like there's 9 likes on this and they have 150,000 followers.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really
make
sense.
What's going on? Oh, yeah. They bought them all.
Yeah.
Or the sneakiest way that people will do it is to have 1 million followers and they're all videos. None of them are pictures. And the reason why... it's because they'll turn off the comment and the like part. So you can't see how many comments, you can't see how many likes, but it shows views, but views are 1 second.
Right.
So maybe it'll show 50,000 views. I mean, you could post something on Instagram through Reels and show 50,000 views.
Right.
But that's not equating to anything.
Right. Yep.
So they're like, oh, I have 1 million followers and look at all this post, but it's all bot.
Yeah.
It's all bot.
Yeah.
Yep.
So those are the types of people that may approach you and say, hey, pay me to share your stuff on my website. And maybe it's, using you guys as an example, maybe it's like a big real estate profile with 1 million followers. And we have a lot of, I don't know, consumers that want to buy houses.
Yeah.
And that's the pitch. And we'll post some of your listings. And it's like, but you're going to get nothing but loss of money because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you'll do it and then see... oh, I got 2 followers.
Yeah.
Or I got nothing
from
that. Whereas back in the day, like my friend at Visit Key West would like share something and, you know, I'd get 5,000 followers.
Yeah.
And then I'd share something and then he'd get it.
Yeah.
And we'd get that reciprocation.
Yeah.
So that was another way to help build it, is befriend other people in the industry and work together.
Yeah.
Instead of compete with each other, work together. Like, I have a podcast, you have a podcast.
Yeah.
You do yours, I do mine,
yep.
You're on mine, I'm on yours, we're helping each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not taking away from you, you're not taking away from me, we're feeding each other. And a little bit more of that, I think, will
Absolutely.
Go along with
more collaboration, less competition.
Yep.
It's not a pie. It's like we all can help each other and
help
each other.
Right. And I'm a big believer in like meritocracy.
Uh-huh.
So like when my friends at Team Caulfield, who's the real estate people, started Houses of Key West, it was at Houses in Key West, who people want to look, they're like, listen, I hope you're okay with this. We're just going to use this to post our listing.
Yeah.
I'm like, go on. Why would I, if you surpassed me by posting better stuff, why would I get mad at you? If you're stealing my stuff, that's different.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not.
Right.
They're good people.
Yeah.
They're promoting their own stuff.
Yeah.
If they grew to 400,000 people, then I'd be happy for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess this is a good point, good part to say. I started a new Instagram called Backyard of Kiwa.
I don't have that one, so that would be good. It's only one yard. It's only one.
I'm just going to keep posting it all over again. But I will be consistent, and I will respond to every single time when he says something to me.
That's right. Well, there was somebody that did, they got Backyards of, and then they got Backyards of in like 50 other cities.
Like the major hubs or whatever.
Major hubs. And started posting, and then they're like, can I share some of your stuff? And they did like Backyards of the Keys and stuff like that. And I was like, this is incredible. Go for it. Share as much as you want.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, if there's any inkling of jealousy or anger or why didn't I do this in me, the answer to get rid of that, to be completely honest, is going like, I don't know how many people work that hard. So this will probably just fade away on its own.
Yeah.
So I should just be nice.
Yeah,
it has. And it has. Big time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Look, I know how hard it was to answer everyone with one backyard.
I was about to say, now you're doing 50.
Imagine 20.
Good God.
You know you can't have 20 in your Instagram, so you got to log out, go on another device, and then answer.
A lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. Well, so I love this conversation, but I want to take a little bit of a turn. Okay, so
I told you I'd talk a lot.
I'm so glad you did.
This will be our longest podcast.
Yeah, no, but it's awesome. So one question that we get pretty much daily is how do you afford to live in Key West? And so I'm so interested to ask this question.
Yeah, we get that asked a lot on our lives. How do you afford to live there? How does anyone
afford
to live here?
Yeah.
And I know it's different for everyone.
Of course.
And we always share that. You know, some people, they either are or are married to someone who's a conk. So someone who's a fifth generation conk and their family has owned property on this island forever. And so, you know, that helps a lot. There's a lot of different ways. So I'm really interested in learning how other people afford to live on the island. So
I have the secret.
Okay.
You ready for the secret?
Yeah.
Everyone, are you ready for the
we're
secret?
We're
going to
have an influx.
On how you can afford to live in Key West.
Yeah.
You don't buy dumb crap.
Yeah, there you go.
And you save your money.
This is like the financial equivalent to don't eat stuff and try to take a pill, right? There's no shortcut. You're telling them what every person would say. But yes, don't buy dumb crap.
You have to look at it like this. Let's put the dollar amount out the window of saying like, Key West is more expensive than, like, say, Homestead, Florida.
Right.
If you live in other parts of Florida, they're much cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Almost any other part of Florida.
Yes. And the cost of building, it's the same material. So why would it cost double here than if you're in Nebraska or wherever? The difference is, you have to figure out your price point. You have to be patient and save your money. You have to pay yourself first, right? So if you make a certain amount of money and you go, cool, I got to pay my cell phone bill and I got to pay my electricity and I got to pay groceries and I got to pay my savings. That should be a percentage of the money you take out. The biggest lesson that really I ever learned when it come to personal finance was that everyone's gone through this where they start a job and they're making money. And then they get a raise. They get a raise and they get a raise. I'm sure from everyone listening, if they've been in a job or jobs for more than 10 years, are making more than the first job they ever had.
Right.
But they have zero savings
throughout
that process. But what's happened? You've made more and you're okay. I was making $1,000 a month. Plus I was making money that I was making in sales to pay the rest of my way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making $2,000 a month now, but I was able to do it. Now let's put aside family and injury and health and all. Let's just say that you're a single person and the same health and all that that you've always had. It's as easy as it is to get used to getting more money and raising your standards, like I had a Volkswagen and now I have an Audi, And then the coolness of the Audi or the watch or the shoes or whatever wears away really quickly. As quickly as the joy of that wears away is as quickly as the pain goes away going the other way. And what I mean by that is when you're paying $250 for cable, which is for most cable packages out there,
yeah,
is that, and you say, all right, I'm going to get Sling and Netflix. And Sling is $40 a month, and Netflix is now $20 or whatever it is a month, and it's $50. Going from $250 to $50, how am I going to watch Friends? And how am I, all these shows? As easy as it is to go, oh, that BMW, I don't need to clean it again. I'm tired of it. As easy as the pain goes away of going, I guess I'm going to deal without that TV show. So chip away at some of these unnecessary things that you think you must have that you don't really need and begin to save and be smart about your money. Now, if you are 20 years old and you're renting and you're like, oh my God, there's no place to rent. There's nothing. Where am I going to rent in Key West? I'm going to spend $3,000 to rent a place in Key West. I think we talked about this before privately, but it's like my first job was in New York City. Every friend I had, everyone I knew, we slummed it. We shared apartments. We ate dollar pizza. I would take my laundry and pile it up, and I'd say, all right, so if I go to the laundromat, between taking the subway to get there and paying for the laundry, that was $15. Or I could take the train to my dad's house, which is $4, and do my laundry there and see my dad. I'm going to do that. Much more difficult than going down the road. But it was those things compound. So it's the compounding of it. Now, it's harder to say, all right, if I want to buy a house and I have no money and I start saving and now I've got $10,000, it's a big amount of savings. Excuse me, what am I going to do? Am I going to buy a house that's $900,000? You commute a little bit.
Yeah.
You buy something up to Keys a little bit. I don't want to hear about commuting. I don't want to hear it. Hour each way to New York City for work. I mean, people will strangle people down here about how much more difficult they do it by cramming three people into a one-bedroom apartment with one bathroom, into carpooling, riding an hour each way to work. Like, you have to put in the time and the effort and the work to be able to save money for your dream. And this is your dream.
Yeah.
You want to own a house in Key West, you have to put in the work. You want chest muscles, push-up time, lots of them, for years. And if you stop, they go away and you start over.
Right.
So it's unfortunately a lot of hard work and a lot of saving.
Yeah.
I did a lot of hard work. I did a lot of savings. We wanted to be in Old Town. I wanted a big old house in Old Town where I could walk to everything. We didn't buy an Old Town. Bought a new town. So we had to sacrifice spending more money in something we still would have preferred, but we bought in Newtown because we decided we wanted to live in Key West. And guess what? I'm almost 50. So I don't want to hear you're 20-something and complaining about you don't own a house in Key West when my first house in Key West, I was almost 50 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and we were renting before that because we didn't know where we wanted to live. And once we knew this was our place, we did everything we could to make it happen.
Well, and I think that goes back to what we were talking about before we started recording is the conversation is really, yes, there's the practical parts of it, but I think the conversation really comes back to the why.
Yeah.
Why do you want to be in Key West? You know, and like I was saying, you know, I think there's a lot of things that sometimes are out of people's hands, but there's a lot that are, that is in your hands. And people ask us, you know, why did you pick Key West or why did you move to the Keys? And the best that we can ever really say, at least for me, is we just love it here and it was important to us to be here and we were in a position where we could. And so we took the opportunity, but there could, you know, maybe there's someone who has different priorities, right? Like I was saying, like maybe someone's like, I need a huge piece of property because I want to have horses and I want to have space to work on cars and I want to have, so Key West wouldn't be a fit for you, right? But if Key West is, at least in our experience, Key West was a fit for us, it's where we want it to be, and you figure out where you sacrifice elsewhere,
yeah.
right? We don't care about cars. We don't care about, like, there's certain things we just don't care about, and so those are not the things we're spending money on because we are making choices to be here on this island and doing what
yeah.
we need to do in order to do that. So I think it's to your point, like, you know, you were almost 50 before you owned on this island. You rented before that, but you guys wanted to be here and you figured out
yeah.
how to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the why. Why do you want to be here?
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, you both are in real estate. We're not
yeah.
going to try to deter people from being and owning a home.
Right.
But, like, the, I forgot who coined the American dream is owning a home.
Mm.
But I believe it was for business purposes.
Mm.
I believe it was brokerage firms that
yeah.
came up with that to say, you need to buy a home because it's the smartest investment
mm.
out there. What people don't understand is, and this may be a big number, and I'm not saying this is my number, but this is like an average in Key West
mm.
now. If you're buying $1 million home, and you're putting on 20%, so you're putting on $200,000,
yeah.
which is a lot of money
yeah.
for anybody.
Right, no question.
But let's pretend it magically appears. After 30 years, you spent $2 million. So you buy a house for $1 million, you spent $2 million
mm-hmm.
in interest and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you got write-offs. Yes, it's your home. You have
mm-hmm.
all that. That means at the end of 30 years, if you sell your house for $2 million, you broke even.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone gets all crazy about, I'm going to buy it and flip it and all these things. The, like, main purpose for somebody who's young to buy a home is it's like almost forcing you to save money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's really doing. It's forcing you. You have to pay a mortgage, and a percentage of that is going into equity, and a percentage is going to the bank to
yeah.
pay. So it's like Big Daddy saying, now come on, Johnny, half to me
yeah.
and half to go in your piggy bank.
Yeah.
That's like a good healthy
yeah.
reason to have it. Plus, if you know you love where you want to live, or if you want to rent it and use it as an investment
yeah.
purpose.
Yeah.
But don't beat yourself up if you're 20-some, 30-some, 40, or 50, and you've decided you're going to rent forever. It's okay.
Yeah.
yeah.
Now, the hardest part of Key West, the caveat
yes.
to that, is that finding a landlord that allows you to rent forever.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these people that have a house and have had a house
yeah.
and they rent it out, and now someone comes a knocking and says, yeah. hey, we want to pay you.
Anyways, yeah, so finding a
yes,
landlord.
So you find, like, I have friends who, like Caitlin, who has a gallery across from us.
Yeah.
They're great tenants. They pay. They have great jobs.
Yeah.
They want to be here forever. Every time they get a new rental, what happens is the landlord's like, don't worry, we're not going to sell it. We're here forever.
Yeah.
They get, like, offered twice as much what it's
mm-hmm.
worth. They're like, by the way,
right.
you got to get out in 6 months.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part
yeah.
of Key West.
Yeah.
That's where the frustration that I have a lot of compassion for
yeah,
people
absolutely.
Is that you have no stability
yeah.
here because, like, if I it's a good lesson for me.
Yeah.
Because if I ever was going to leave,
yeah.
say my son goes to college and he settles in California and
yeah.
that's where we want to be closer to him.
Yeah.
I won't sell my place. I'll rent my place. But I'll always undervalue it. And I'll tell the people, you pay on time. You're good. Everything works. I'm never going to sell it.
Yeah.
I'll put that in writing.
Yeah.
And then you know you'll have an incredible tenant
yeah.
for the rest of your life. Because nobody's doing that. So this all, this is like full circle to how we started this.
Yeah.
It all goes back to the capitulation trading and the counter trending and doing the opposite.
Yeah.
It's like if you just, like when I grew up, please, thank you, opening the door, being nice to people, that was like not, that was the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, did you brush your teeth?
Yeah.
Did you use toilet paper? Did you say thank you?
Yeah.
Like it's all part of how you're supposed to
yeah.
act. Nowadays, if you do those simple things that we were taught or your parents were taught
yeah.
to do, you're like a freaking superstar.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the bare minimum
yeah.
is now above and beyond.
Yeah.
So if you could just hold on to some of those
yeah.
bare minimums and do a little bit more, you're a superstar.
Yeah.
That's how you grow your business. That's how you have a good relationship. That's
yeah.
how you save your money.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things get
yeah.
wrapped up.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's so true. Well, thank you so much for all your feedback on all of the different topics that we've talked about.
Long-winded, but hopefully everyone will like
it. No, it was wonderful. And we appreciate you sharing all about your story and everything you haven't told anyone before. So maybe Deneen.
Oh, she knows it all.
Us and Deneen.
Yeah. She like, I wake up in the middle of the night screaming, and she's like, oh, I know another story. Smart doesn't even know because it was a subconscious.
Right. Absolutely. So remind everyone where they can find you online.
Everything is Backyards of Key West. So backyardsofkeywest.com and the socials, except for Twitter, is Backyards of KW because I couldn't spell it out.
We all have that one social profile that's off by just like a couple of letters.
Yeah, but it's backyardsofkeywest.com and you can find everything there, podcasts, everything in one place.
Okay.
And then the shops in Mallory Square.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is right where the aquarium is. Go to the aquarium.
Yeah.
There's a side entrance over there. The Cuban Coffee Queen is in there. It's a good place to go. Come say hi.
And you're 10 to 6? Is that your hours?
We are 10 to 5, Monday through Friday, Sunday 11 to 3. Saturday 11 to 3. Sunday's fun day.
Okay.
We're closed on Sunday.
Awesome. Okay. Right. Cool. Anything else you want to say?
That's it.
All right. Well,
awesome.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much, Mark. So remember, like, subscribe, share, follow,
all
that good stuff to all of us. And thank you, guys. See ya.
See you later.